All set to start.
All right. Ed, if you want to go down and see who else is on the phone from the non-committee members.
Well, I think due to the taping, we should just do the committee members again.
Okay.
So I have Brandy is here, Chad, Steve Hillier, I did not hear from. Shelley McDermott is here, Dave Pelagi is here, Frank Roberts is here, Angel Torres is here. Amos didn't answer. Okay, down the operators, Jeremy Bailey.
Here.
Rich Brock.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Jeremy, are you here?
Yes.
Okay, good. Rich Brock. Ken Clark. Charles Cody. Jasmarie DeJesus. Keith DeLeo. Yolanda Dope. Adam Fairbanks. Carmela Ferreira is here. Anthony Ford.
No. I'm here.
You are here? Okay.
I am.
Keith Haley.
Here.
Mike Heaney. Glenda Lee Hernandez. Barbara Miller. Lloyd Montague. Sylvie Ramirez. Ken Ramsey. Well, that was Barbara?
Barbara Miller, checking in.
Okay. You hear from Ken Ramsey, Helen Ceramic, Gigi Yanez Hamburger. And the agency, is Nick Pienza here? Joel Garcia? Tracy's here?
Yes, I am.
I'm here. Tyrell's here. Brian's here. Jesse, you're here? And David Walsh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's it then. Is anybody else who I didn't call? Okay. That's your attendance. So that's welcome. So everybody welcome. Okay. We're using the minutes we proposed to use last time, and the next item on there was the approval of the minutes of April 9th, April 16th, May 22nd, and I also sent out minutes from our meeting last week as well, 6:16. So, Frank, if you want to take those up.
Yeah, I'll ask if anyone wants to make a motion to accept all those minutes.
I have a question. Are we accepting the minutes even though it wasn't recorded? Or is that still fine, or?
Yeah, we had to do, this is Brian, I'm sorry, we had to do minutes to reflect that the meeting was called and then adjourned. So the minutes, in essence, just say that. We have to at least acknowledge it was held long enough to establish it wasn't being recorded and had to adjourn.
Okay. I, Shelley, make the motion that we accept the minutes.
Do I have a second?
On the agenda.
I second it.
That's Dave.
Yep.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Okay, motion carries.
Okay. Under old business, I'll take the first item, is budget update. As I said, I keep a record of all of the income and expenses of the program, and this is through the month of May. We did notice that during the month of May, our total income to the program had a decrease of about $40,000. But along with that, our expenses also had a decrease because we weren't doing all the repairs and some of the services out there in the field that we normally would during an operational period. So all in all, we wound up for the end of the month about where we always are, with just about over $1 million in the account. But that, you know, we have to see how, as we progress during this time of, you know, building shutdowns, how the vending commissions continue to come in. We are fortunate that the commissions from DOT are coming in the same as they always have. We have saved a little bit this year on payroll. We saved about $96,000 so far in the payroll category. So that about sums up the account. Have any questions on the budget?
A quick question.
Yeah.
If you're saying that the Department of Transportation hasn't really been affected, does that mean, are you virtually saying that us allowing the food trucks at rest stops hasn't really affected us at all?
No, that's not the same. The DOT commissions come from the mobile mini marts and the McDonald's on 95.
Oh, okay.
Where they propose to put the and that's a standard amount. That doesn't waver by percentage at all. Several years ago, they came up with an amount that they would give us, and they religiously give us that amount every month. And so they haven't. Obviously, they get their commission from the mini marts and stuff from the contract that they have, and so they have been transferring that over to us. But it's not the same. Like the food trucks went into, I believe, like Wallingford and Meriden, and those locations are part of our vending machine contract locations. So. Vending trucks wouldn't have an effect on the DOT payment.
The vending trucks went into Wallingford, Middletown, and Maristone rest areas.
Okay. But they weren't at Willington, our biggest area.
Correct.
The committee had talked about regulations update. Frank, you had appointed some people to be on that committee?
Yeah, I had appointed Brandy, Rich Brodschiff, and Chad Farr.
I have them ready to go based on what Terry, I think. Somebody at the National Federation went over them for us and then with us and gave us some suggestions, and I have all the suggestions. I did get arranged for Rich and Chad to go over them with me and say, yeah, that sounds good, so that then I could present them. So it's just not me saying, hey, here's my idea. So that's where we're at, though.
Okay. The next item is the vending contract. We all know that the existing one expires on the 30th, which would be next Tuesday, a week from today. So I guess that leaves us plenty of time. we are still in the final negotiations. Hopefully we will have something in place by next Tuesday. I can't really say much more about that.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
So, if per se we didn't extend, when does it after the contract ends in the 30th? So does that mean, let's say we don't have the Coca-Cola is not the person that wins it anymore? Does that mean all our pricing on July 1st is going to automatically change? How would that work? Because I just want to be prepared, and if so, then for that possibility. I know you can't tell me that's going to happen, but I'm asking, is that a possibility that if the contract wasn't renewed, is that what would happen? That then we would go to a regular pricing Coca-Cola's regular pricing as opposed to our contract pricing that we're under right now. Because that affects me, Shelly, Frank, and Angel right now. If, you know, should we be, is that a possibility? I mean,
Well, this is Shelly chiming in. I guess, even though I'm not on the committee, Ed, correct me if I'm wrong, wouldn't, depending on how the negotiation, the terms came about, they would change anyway?
Well, I really think this is maybe something we will have to send out. I'm not really comfortable talking about it right now.
Okay.
We're bound by confidentiality in this process. It is an excellent question, but I think it would be best to let a contract be signed by DAS first before giving any indication about what might happen, because it's never really done until the ink's dried on the paper. So it's an excellent question, but I think we have to hold off on the answer to it. Okay. And actually, when I originally sent out the minutes, I sent out the whole pamphlet on reopening Connecticut. And there was some real good advice in there as far as, you know, what would have to be done in a restaurant setting to open up. We've since been able to open up a couple of the seasonal locations. They've been reviewed by the health department and approved. There are some things we were looking into that can give you a little bit of information on now. We're looking into the question of whether or not we would be able to have self-serve coffee. And it appears as though the answer to that right now is going to be no. The latest governor's guidance that I have on it is that all self-serve items, including coffee, are not to be offered. And DAS has also recently put out a guideline as to things that will happen in the building. And one of the things that they are doing is removing all Keurig and coffee pots from all break areas. And they're having all small pieces of equipment moved out of break areas. So they're temporarily taking them out, and they're going to have them stored. And even at that, the building capacity is going to be only up to 50%. They also, just of note for those locations that have elevators, that are going to have occupancy of the elevators to two individuals at a time. And when it comes to cafeterias, it says we'll be required to meet all current requirements for restaurants and retail establishments, including occupancy limit signage, staff/service requirements for PPE and disinfection, and submission of their proposed reopening plan to DAS property manager. And the cafeteria seating areas will be closed except for those located outside. So, and the different agencies will be responsible for posting signage of change in normal use policy in the cafeterias as well. So, I think that's pretty clear that maybe we've got to start thinking about how to restructure the facility so maybe it becomes more like a coffee service place, especially if there's not going to be allowed any coffee makers throughout the DAS buildings. If they're being removed, maybe coffee has to be served over the counter.
Well, Ed, that includes like myself and Frank with the micro markets. Those are essentially self-serve, so no more of those. Not the old style. I'm familiar with the old style, but that's including now me and Frank in that proposal, correct?
Yeah.
You know, this is Brian. I've got a thought on that, and I don't necessarily have the answer, but I'm just wondering how we might go about getting the answer. And it would be that they are allowing the microwaves to remain. And I'm wondering if coffees could be pre-made and pre-sealed in, you know, containers with lids, and then made available, perhaps kept in the refrigeration section, but made available so people could then microwave the sealed coffee. Obviously, the creamers and the sugar, they all have to be individual serving. They can't be, you can't use like a cream dispenser, but you know, you got like little mini moves, you know, the self-sealed little mini moves. But I'm just wondering if it might be possible to have some coffee, and I'm not familiar enough with whether or not there are certain kinds of coffees that are more able to be, like, retain their flavor and freshness once they're cold and get reheated. I think somebody who's got more expertise than me in that might be able to answer it. But I think the answer has to be the serving of a sealed cup of coffee. So whether the operators behind the counter, like, for 2 hours a day, providing coffee to individuals and handing it to them, you know, obviously wearing a glove and wearing a mask and handing it to them, or whether or not it is like reaching into some entity in order to retrieve it, you know. But I that was a thought I had anyway.
This is Shelley, and I have a question. Since Frank and I are kind of like in a more unique situation from everyone else who's in the big cafeterias or who even serve coffee in the program, has anyone reached out to Baronette or the salesperson who did this with us, Jerry, or is someone, or could anybody just reach out to him and see what are their recommendations, and then we could probably use that and present it, or self-service, self-serve.
Shelley, that's a great idea. Between Ed and Tracy, they'll still find a field representative to make that call.
I think Tyrell has made that call.
Oh,
I did. I spoke with Jerry actually last week, and what he said to me was a lot of his accounts, unfortunately, are signing someone to hand out coffees. Obviously, these accounts are much larger. He obviously is responsible for Connecticut and Massachusetts and some other areas. And he said outside of Connecticut, other states are still resuming coffee as normal, unfortunately, on our end. But he says outside of his larger account placing an actual body there to dispense, he does have a couple of small accounts who are kind of playing it close by just, you know, still utilizing their coffee machines but keeping sanitizer on the counter. Now, like Tracy made mention earlier, and Brian, you alluded to this as well, is that at the end of the day, DAS can ultimately have the final say, and at this time, it appears that they don't want us utilizing these machines. So, obviously, sanitizer being placed by the units would not be applicable at this time. So, you know, and thinking about what you're saying, Brian, as far as pre-made coffee, I think the struggle on that end would be, especially Shelley's place, and I'm not really sure the volume Frank does, is that the current machines that they have set up are made specifically for individual use, and they would probably have to start the night before to make enough coffee to even possibly offer that option. And I'm not sure, even at that point, if that would be considered almost like a production sense, and it might violate the current license level that they currently have in place. I don't know that to be sure, but I'm thinking it may very well come down to that, because I don't know if you can really prepare something for resale, because at that point, on-premise, health departments might look at that to be outside of their current license level. But I mean, certainly something we can inquire on if you felt that was going to be beneficial. But you know, I think we can look at this two ways, right? So we can look at it as obviously the expense of a body is going to, you know, hinder the sales. But then on the flip side, if we get the volumes back in the building, even at, let's say, up to 50%, and knowing that every floor now has to run through your micro market, it may be able to offset a part-timer, you know, if you can get someone who's just happens to be looking for 2 hours worth of work in the morning or something, it may offset that expense. So I don't know. I'm looking at this kind of two ways, because it's kind of a gift in the sense that you now would be the sole provider of this coffee, which could potentially increase business, offsetting any additional expenses that may endure during the process. So I don't know. It's something to think about, but I think for now, I think we have our answer as for immediate cease of the coffee until we figure it out.
Tyrell, you brought up a good point.
Yep.
We all know that local health departments have a say in what you provide and how you provide it. I mean, this is a gubernatorial decision so far. So what about the health department? Do we just go by whatever they say, or this is a DAS as an agency thing?
Well, this is, I think, yeah, go ahead, Brian.
I was gonna say, and Tyrell probably has the same answer I'm gonna have, but I'm glad you brought that up, Shelley, because you all are kind of having to respond to a multitude of entities. You've got, if you are in a state building, the rules that govern the state buildings and food service and state buildings. You have your local health department that they have their rules that you also have to follow. Then you have reopened self-certification process that you must go through and indicate you're complying with. So you literally have three different entities that you must satisfy them all. And as Tyrell said earlier, while outdoor seating is allowed everywhere, indoor seating is allowed under certain circumstances, and there's in the reopen plan when you go and self-certify, there's instructions on how you can go about having indoor seating. But for the state buildings, the guidance there says no indoor seating. And a city health department may come up with a set of rules that they're required. So go ahead, Tyrell. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I think whenever any decision that we make going forward, I think before we even bring it to DAS's attention, we have to just make sure from a health standpoint that it's acceptable. Because one thing DAS can do, what they can't do, is they can add, I mean, they can always add to the level of direction and as far as what they want to accept in their building. But they can't remove anything as far as what the health department is implementing. So knowing that, I think going forward, the way we move is we want to be sure that we get the appropriate sign-off from just the outside. Is this eligible from a health safety standpoint? And then while we are creating our, let's say, our state reopen plan to DAS, we don't have to look backwards to say, well, DAS allowed us to, you know, operate these coffee machines, and then boom, the health department comes in an inspection, and then they shut us down, and now we really look like fools. You know, I know what Tracy had inquired on with DAS earlier, it appears that DAS is, like Brian said, they're creating their own plan of action, but they're also reminding us, per se, that, you know, we should be following the governor's, you know, reopen along with the health department. So my mind is that DAS is not going to potentially, they expect and they anticipate that we are following the outside rules prior to, you know, any additional questions we may have in specific to their individual building. So I think just going forward that we must keep in mind, we get the appropriate sign-off from the health department, in which I would assume that the health department is going to have the knowledge of what the governor's ordinance is. I mean, we also have that information, but I would have to believe that the health department also is going to include the governor's directive in part of their their allowance of whatever they allow as far as reopening each and every location we're looking to open. So we just got to kind of move strategic and be sure that we get the okay before going to DAS, so we know in case DAS asks us, we can certainly say, oh yeah, health department has cleared that, you know, we've had prior conversations to that, and I'm sure they'll say okay and maybe apply a little additional twist if necessary to the mix, but that's it.
Can I ask you a question? My facility is rented. It's not a state building because there's other businesses in it. This is Carmella from the Danbury DMV. So do I have to follow the same rules too?
Yes. I would say at this point, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brian or Ed, but I think any rule that's being applied, especially by DAS, even regardless of who's managing, I would say we should state right across the line, as it's obviously more of a precaution safety than anything. And, you know, obviously I think they've thought of it. To me, I think it's going to be a collective effort to ensure that we maximize the safety in these buildings.
Oh, so this is Shelley. I have a kind of not a question, but you probably answered it. So that mean when we as the committee or the agency goes to DAS, is this across the board for all our facilities or as each facility becomes operational online again?
I would say that we should set something up for each individual facility as no two are alike. I mean, we certainly need to work on a base, which would be applicable to, you know, a base standard, which would be applicable to all of the facilities. But I would say that the proposal probably should be individual because there's going to be certain setups and layouts in which I think we're going to be responsible for to ensure that we are following. You know, me personally, I've never been in everyone's facility. So I'm kind of looking from the outside in, but I would have to assume that every facility may have just a difference of something that may require us to maybe be very specific in which our approach is in opening. Like Barbara Miller's place is very small, I know that. So we may have to do something that's slightly different and acknowledge that in our proposal. So I would say individual.
This is Gigi. I have a question at this point. When are most of the regular facilities going to be reopened? Is it a time now that it will be during the third phase, or which particular phase are we targeting for most of the facilities to be open?
Hold on. Is there someone on the line that's shifting paper or something? It's very hard to hear, so if you could hit *6 to mute your phone.
I heard your question. I'll answer it. I would say to you, Gigi, you know, there is no specific date in my mind, and obviously things can change day by day, week by week. I would just say this, that in order for your business to flourish and to continue, you know, a long path of longevity, we have to be sure that there's enough occupancy in your building to warrant the reopen, okay? And trust me, I know like many of you on the call are probably just like pacing back and forth waiting to kind of resume life. However, there's a couple factors, right? So one, we're trying to see if we can get a replenishment dollars for your inventories, right? So those are extremely valuable dollars at this point of the game. So be sure that these dollars actually manifest to growth and profit. We have to make sure that there's occupancy in your building. I can tell you that for many of your locations and kind of looking at the numbers, I mean, me personally, I think you would need at least, and this is like the bare minimum in my mind, 50% to potentially be able to continue. 65, I think, would get you back and, you know, at a decent profit and so forth. But 50 would be the rock bottom bare minimum. Because the one thing you don't want, there's two things that, well, we're up against a lot. But one of the main things is that we utilize the dollars in which you guys hopefully are going to receive, which I'm assuming you all will. We're working on that. But we utilize it to the point where it's going to turn instant profit, because you don't want to take these dollars and not even so much fill your facility, let's just say fill them 50%, and then the product expires out because you don't have the occupancy. Because at that point, these dollars have done you no good, and it'll put you in a major bind. So we have to strategically move, and we, again, have to take the approach of when we feel there's enough population in the building that warrants our presence. So I think that's what you really got to keep in mind, is that we're not going to move just based off of, you know, maybe the governor acknowledging that he's ready to, you know, allow 25 or another 10% of people. We have to stay in touch with the building managers and be sure that we have, to the best of our ability, a number of people in on a daily basis, just not an approved number. And that's another thing, because we're also up against people teleworking. So even if they should say, okay, there's a building of 1,000, and you're saying we've now allowed, you know, 50% occupancy. Well, that's good, but that's 50% to that day, and out of that 50%, how many people that were allowed? So you're saying on Monday, up to 500 people can go to work. However, if the, you know, if people are still working from home, and you have 70% of those people out of the 500, it's not going to be a number that warrants to reopen at that moment. So we really have to pay close attention as to what, you know, the real occupancy and not just the level of approval is. I think that's the key.
This is
now.
Hello.
Yes.
Go ahead. I have a question, or this is Barbara Miller calling, well, speaking rather. Now, my profit normally during these times, I totally agree with what you just said, because of the fact that I normally get visitors, tourists at this point. I'm not going to be getting any tourists, even if the governor says open next week. Now, normally, except for the summer tourists, my profit comes from session, mainly during session. Now, there's no session right now. I heard of a special session, which I didn't know about. And what you mentioned, I'm going to be working from home. So from what you just said, I don't see myself opening, even if the governor says the LOB will be open July 1st. Because no one will be in there July 1st. It will be open because my summer, normally during the summer after session, which ends May 31st, 90%, well, of the time, that's when it ends. I don't get anyone in my store except for tourists, visitors, travelers. So it wouldn't make sense for me to open even if he says July 1st. So I understand the thing regarding watching, because those people that work in the LOB, they don't support my business. They're not the ones that work there. It's people that come in during session and tourists during the summer months. So I am one of those that have to watch things that you just mentioned. Really good point. Makes lots of sense, especially for me.
But yeah, and again, like I said, you know, obviously it's all of our best interest to get you guys back up and running as soon as possible, and especially understanding, you know, just the time of just wanting to kind of get back in to day-to-day responsibilities. But trust and believe that no one wants to set you up for failure. And, you know, there's going to be times, and I mean, like I said, I have absolutely no clue at the moment as to any facility outside of the ones that we're currently working on. As to the reopening, but believe me and trust us all that we have your best interest, and we understand, you know, first and foremost as to what's important and getting you guys up and running as soon as possible without setting you up for initial failure, because that's my biggest concern, to be perfectly honest, is that, you know, we put all this legwork in to then set you up and then really put you in a financial bind in which at that point, you may not be able to assist, you know, financially again to get you back on your feet once we, you know, population of people truly resume. So it's just like the virus. It's kind of like, you know, yes, things are coming around, you know, are picking back up around us. However, we still have to proceed with caution, and I think that's the best way to look at our facilities and our approach to reopening.
In addition to what I just said, it would not be profitable for me, and would I be able to collect unemployment even though the building itself is open and I'm not back yet?
Yeah, I would say yes. And I don't know if I haven't worked much on the unemployment side. I know a couple of the field reps. And I don't.
Pyro, I can answer that because Barbara, yeah. Currently I'm receiving the benefits. And because I have to put in weekly whatever, because I'm technically still open being a market setup. So I put in whatever my weekly net profit is for last week, and based off of those numbers, they determine if and what amount I am entitled to for that same qualifying week. So yes, you can, but and you have to go, if you haven't filed yet, they will go through a whole determination process. But if you haven't filed yet, I suggest that you do so just to see where you fall in what and how long your duration is.
I have filed.
Hi, this is Joel. From at least that standpoint, just knowing that it's not necessarily if your building's open, it's more of a determination on whether you feel safe and comfortable enough to go back to work. Because now the restaurants, let's say for example, they've given the employees opportunities to go back to work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to. They just have to know that at least in that private sector, that their job might not be available for them. But unemployment will be allotted to any, whether it's small business or like individual, regardless of if your opportunity to go back or not. And I believe that's going to go until the end of the year or until your 36 weeks. It was 26 weeks and they added 10 weeks. So it's either your 36 weeks are up and your money has run out, or December 31st, 2020.
Okay. I got a letter.
Also just
December 31st.
Good. Yeah. But also keep in mind you're going to be responsible for any taxes at the beginning of the year if you decide to take the full amount of your unemployment opportunity.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thanks much.
Okay. One of the other things we talked about under the reopening plan is for all of the managers to kind of put together a listing of the product of the inventory that they lost due to the shutdown of COVID. Now it has to be a list of products, a definite list that's extended out and supported by invoice costs. If we're able to do anything as far as providing any type of replacement inventory or value, we're going to need something from each and every location that's documented and approved. So that's certainly one thing you can all be working on. I think we did discuss there was an attempt to get the potential use of federal funds for restocking, which has initially been denied, but it's kind of trying to be readdressed again. We don't know how that's going to come out and exactly where the funding is going to be able to come from. But I think step one in your recovery is to kind of identify what type of loss you incurred because of what type of product loss you incurred due to COVID.
No, I just had a question regarding that. Because I haven't been in my facility for the times that I have, you know, I haven't gone there. I guess we should go see our facilities. Hope they'll let us in, you know, to visit and see if we can do this. Because I have right now, I'll have to go see what's out there, what I lost, and what I still can recoup. Right? I mean, that's basically the way we will need to do that.
For the most part, it would be whatever stock you had back in March that would have been perishable or date coded that would expire before the reopening date of the facility, which is yet unknown. The things that wouldn't count would be any, like, non-perishable paper goods that you could use, you know, going forward.
And what about things like sodas? Because, you know, we have a little soda machine there and things like that. I mean, things that might have an expiration date. I just, you know, I'll have to, you know, because I don't know whether they still, you know, things like that. I guess I would have to, because we left them there thinking that we didn't know how long we were going to be out. And it's been 3 months now. So that's my question. I mean, it's a very simple, kind of silly question, but I'm curious about how to go about. I know some of the things that were perishable, but I wanted to give you a more update, you know, things like, for example, we left potato chips that we didn't know that we were going to be that long, you know, things like that are not necessarily, you know, like lettuce or things like that, but that they might still not be able to use.
I would think most of those items you mentioned would probably be out of code by now. Even soda nowadays doesn't have that long a shelf life on it. So as far as taking it, I don't know if there's a real, you know, need, how you feel about being at a facility. We're not requiring anybody to go to a facility if they're not comfortable going to a facility. And I don't know, maybe you need to check with the policy of your building as far as going in before attempting to access the facility.
Okay, thank you.
We also had on the agenda menus and pricings, and how you really got to look at maybe downsizing the menus. During this time, I see there was a lot of industry articles about companies who survive by doing just that, by limiting their menu, cutting off, you know, things like, for example, the places that served all-day breakfast, they cut that out, and making the offering simple so you could use certain ingredients without having to stock up on other ingredients. But one of the things that's going to be critical is the pricing of the product when you go back. And we're going to have to do that kind of at the time of going back to see what the market is really charging, and to come up with a reasonable price that you are, in fact, making a profit on the items and not just turning dollars, because it's going to be critical that you start out with the right price structure, given the times. We already heard how much some of the different, like, meat items have gone up. So for that, you have some field staff who are very good at that sort of thing, and you can call on their expertise in the helping of setting up a pricing structure.
Do we have to also put in for the new dollar an hour for minimum wage in October? Should we, like, already increase the price? Because you're not going to increase it again then in October, right? Because last year, immediately, I had price increases on everything.
Was it October or is it September?
October 1st.
Because it was 11 months. Well, when did it take effect the last time?
I thought it was last time. Yeah, October 1st last time. That's what I'm saying, so I know it's coming up sometime soon.
You can check on that. I thought once it started, it was every 11 months thereafter.
My payroll company told me it was September. That's what I thought it was.
All right.
That sounds right. If it was October last time, it would be September this year.
Okay.
11 months. That's what I think.
Okay.
This is Brian. I want to also address what Shelley was asking in terms of the price increases and building in the minimum wage, and whether there would be, like, should we put a price now and then have to increase it in 2 months? Well, I'm going to answer that by first off indicating what Tyrell said is, I believe, completely accurate in that many of these buildings are not going to have occupancy at a level that would allow you to reopen prior to probably when that minimum wage takes effect. But for those of you who, for whatever reason, are able to open and have some items priced now, I think that, you know, basically we have employees that have not been in these buildings for quite some time, and you may want to work with your field rep to first off find out what is a reasonable price to even put on items right now to give people the opportunity to get reacquainted with this entire model. And then if prices need to be adjusted in some later date because the minimum wage is impacted on you, well, we already sort of are recognizing that the number of employees you will have in this new environment may look radically different from what you had previously. You may not be able to have a chef under current circumstances because you, first off, don't have enough clientele in the building to make purchases of those hot entrees, and you may find that those entrees that you make end up going to waste, and you have product that you're losing. So you probably need to phase in your employee base in accordance to the building's population and the frequency of the location. So I think it might be premature to raise a price on the belief you're going to have X number of employees that you have to absorb a minimum wage increase for. And Tyrell or Ed or Tracy, by all means, feel free to weigh in from your perspective.
This is Brandy.
I would agree. Certainly, I think when we talk about employees, I think we need to be looking the opposite direction in trying to now think about ways we can eliminate an employee, at least for many of your locations in which you guys have employees. I think it's going to be very critical in understanding that there will have to be functions that now are handled by maybe by many of you that you haven't done in the past. You know, maybe I don't know what it is, and obviously everyone has a different visual impairment and understanding that. But I think now is the time to really think about the things that you may have had interest in doing, but you didn't think that you were capable of doing, but maybe with the right technology, you're able to do it. And if those are, you know, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's running a POS. I don't know if it's making a sandwich. I don't know, but start to really think about areas in which you may be able to fulfill an employee's responsibility, because that is going to be the goal. The goal, in order to really maximize your profits, aren't solely going to be off of what you set your prices on a product, but it's going to be more or less where you can make cuts at to increase. So it's a very strategic plan of thinking when reopening that every decision you make in the grand scheme of your business is going to affect your profit. And so knowing that, we got to keep in mind that, yes, certainly price your product accordingly, and I think that's important, that, you know, don't give anything away and certainly establish a profit line. However, we can't excessively increase all of our profits while serving a very small population of people, because that will give them, you know, just the thought process and the mindset that they can just wait, you know, another hour and then go across the street or so forth. But certainly price competitively, but don't be excessive in your pricing, but more or less strategize on thinking how you can reduce your business expenses to increase the profit.
This is Brandy. In regards to the, you know, why don't you price now accordingly and then wait till September and go up, some of us have it in our contract that we're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to increase prices more than once a year. We have a set date in which we are allowed to do that. So in this situation, obviously, this is a given situation, but in my case, when I go to the school, I have to go to the school with what I plan for the next year, unless there's some dramatic change in the
prices of things. Like this was a dramatic change, so I can request, I could have requested a change because the dramatic change in cost. But normally, I'm supposed to every year have a review, and that's when we discuss going up in prices. So for some people, I think they do need to consider that minimum wage does go up in September, a dollar. Each person goes up a dollar in September. And granted, you may not have one person. Cool, that's going to take care of everyone else. But again, still, beef is $4 a pound right now. Like, if you're making a hot entree with ground beef at $4 a pound, you know, and throwing it away, you just, it doesn't matter that you don't have that employee, because even not having that employee still isn't accounting for things. So I think, again, you need to plan for maybe having less employees, but you need to plan for the price that those employees, I think, are going to be making, because, again, not everybody can come back to the table in September or October or November or even January and say, okay, well, minimum wage went up, so I want to increase my prices. They're going to say, well, you just increased your prices when you came back. Why didn't you think of that before? So I think, depending on your
I think you're bringing up a very valid concern. At the same time, I believe that from at least the Bureau's perspective, we would be well positioned to make an argument that many of these decisions are being made at a much larger scale than what this particular operation is. For instance, in the reopen plan for restaurants, there cannot be salad bars. There cannot be self-serve buffets. So lots of stations at facilities that presently exist, even though they're closed, but they're there, those stations can't be reopened when you reopen. So your price points are based on things that are out of control. And I think if a facility were to try to hold us to an agreement that says, you know, you're supposed to serve hot entrees, well, I think that we'd be in a position to make an argument, particularly if they don't have the capacity that was established in that agreement, because they're not allowed to have that capacity. We know they're going to be capped at 50%. In terms of the colleges, we don't know if they're going to reopen and have full campus. We don't know that yet.
Right. Yeah. I would certainly just say this, that any facility that is going to prepare to reopen outside of these seasonal locations, before we open, we're going to look at every angle of your facility before presenting our proposal to DAS. And that would also include the pricing. And at that time, when we get to your specific facility, we will certainly look at pricing and factor in all potential increases in which we, you know, anticipate, along with the pricing, along with the fact that, like Brian said, it's going to be a diminished population. So obviously your buying power is going to be less, which in turn, I already understand, maybe 10 or 15 cents more for that candy bar versus because you didn't buy a case, now you're buying individuals, whatever the case may be. Rest assured that we will look at every single item, because that's one thing that I want to be, I want everyone that's involved in your particular facility, myself, the field rep, as well as you, I want you to be knowledgeable of what you're selling and what your profit points are. To me, you can't successfully run an operation when you don't know what things cost you and you don't know your profit points. So that, to me, is just one-on-one business, and that we should have that established and be confident with that number prior to presenting the DAS. And again, letting it be competitive but not excessive, where you're pricing yourself right out of the facility and making someone go to a vending machine to get the same thing that you're serving in your cafeteria. So, and if it's something that costs you a lot that you carried in the past, and it's even more now, then you can't carry it. As we talk about beef, and you know that price structure or that per pound amount is higher, then you know you have to make a good business decision and not offer that dish. These are the things that's going to keep your business going. Is that you can't, you have to understand that your old ways may not work going forward. You know, you have to have a new mindset. You have to have an understanding that today is going to call for grab and go. It's not going to call for the old traditional style lunch cafeteria style lunches. I was thinking about it just the other day. I'm saying we need to start even thinking about those that have cafeterias, like offering like large pizzas and things like that. Things that you're now your competition is outside. So having a larger mindset of, you know, not so much being an individual meal, but maybe, you know, something that provides lunch more than two. Obviously, I understand social distancing and so forth. I get it. But by the time your places may open, maybe that piece of it, you know, maybe you can, well, obviously we see it now at the restaurants. You can congregate at a table. So picking up items and introducing items that will give you large profit. Pizzas will give you large profit. Your grab-and-go items can give you large profit. So all of that work that it takes to create this wonderful dish that you have this great chef that can produce, that's great. However, like we said, there's always waste, and that chef costs you a lot of money. So, you know, if you're making $3 off of an entree now, can you imagine what a large pizza can bring you for profit? Probably double that. And guess what? You can make that item with a general employee at $12 to $15 an hour and produce the same profit in which you hired a professional chef to create something. And mark my words, pizza will sell. And you can't mess that up. You buy good ingredients. You will be competitive with those outside of your establishment. So that's the mindset I think we have to start to think about is what can I do to provide quicker, faster, and a much more profitable profit while not needing such an expensive chef to prepare a dish. That's the mindset that's going to keep you in business in today's climate. Trust me.
I have a question. Yep. This is Shelley. This is pertaining to people like Brandy. Not sure, sure who else is at the community colleges. But Brian and Ed, anyone online, correct me if I'm wrong. But I was under the impression, based off of what's going on out there in the news and some of the releases, that a lot of the colleges are going back. They're going to be operating, you know, based off of, like, appointment times or kids going in to eat and things like that. But